This is a Yahoo Finance special, Market Movers. After one of the best years on record, what's in store for stocks in 2022? Will the bull market stay alive as the high flyers fizzle? We'll take a look at what will drive the market in the weeks and months ahead. The Fed, inflation, COVID, the midterm elections, all in the mix for investors. We're also watching crypto, IPOs, SPACs, and where the so-called smart money is going. Over the next hour, we'll hear from some of the investment world's top insiders. It's all ahead on this Yahoo Finance special as we help you stay one step ahead of the markets. Welcome to this Yahoo Finance special presentation of Market Movers. I'm Alexis Christophorus. The stock market has a pretty tough act to follow here in the new year. Despite a global pandemic and the highest inflation in 40 years, the S&P 500 rallied 26% in 2021. That's on top of a 17% gain the prior year. So what does this new year have in store for investors? So far, we know it's off to a pretty rocky start. Well, over the next hour, we'll be speaking with some of the brightest minds on Wall Street to get their perspective on the markets and where they see opportunity for you in the new year. We're going to kick things off with Beth Ann Bovino, Chief U.S. Economist at S&P Global. Beth Ann, great to see you and happy new year. You know, if the past 2 years have taught us anything, I think it's taught us just how resilient Americans can be. So I'm curious how optimistic you are about the U.S. economy in 2022.
Funny you should say that. I see it as we're certainly seeing a slowdown in growth from the 37-year high. But again, we're looking at growth at just under 4%, which is twice what would be considered potential or trend growth for the U.S. So we see it more as growing pains. We think households are in pretty good shape. Indeed, we're looking at a job market that is incredibly tight with wages climbing higher. Inflation is certainly going to pinch people's pocketbooks, but they are still sitting on a lot of savings because of basically stimulus from last year, as well as those strong wages that are coming to them.
So what do you expect economic growth to be this year? What's your forecast?
We're looking at economic growth to come to slow down to around just under 4%. That is, as I mentioned, about twice what would be considered potential or long-term growth rate. Really good numbers. We're certainly expecting to see a slowdown in housing, helped by the Fed actually ratcheting up interest rate hikes going forward. And we do see households slowing, kind of being a little bit more circumspect on purchasing because recovery high. Last year. So we do think them slowing down, but we don't think that they're going to shut down their pocketbooks completely.
So, Beth Ann, you mentioned a tight labor market, kind of an understatement here heading into the new year. We've got the unemployment rate at 3.9% for December. Pre-pandemic, let's remember, it was 3.5%. Yet we still have people quitting their jobs at a record rate. How much is the labor shortage going to be an issue for these supply chain constraints, but also for corporate America, for profit margins, or as companies are going to be forced to continue to raise those wages?
Well, we thought that we had earlier said that we didn't think it was tied to unemployment benefits. We saw that the real story was basically labor market exit. And when you look at the numbers today based on the jobs report that just came out, what it was that over half, I guess almost about 70% were largely because of labor exit. And the big factor there is prime age workers. Why are they leaving? We think it's a lot of it's tied to the virus. And now that we have Omicron, it's just going to mean that it's extended. The problem is still there. We think it probably won't start to soften until sometime later this year, probably in the second half of the year. That means businesses are still going to be squeezed.
So the Fed, we know, is poised to sort of end our country's love affair with easy monetary policy. We're expecting those rate hikes. They telegraphed it could come as early as March. Goldman Sachs today out with a prediction for rate hikes in 2022. Where do you stand?
We're looking at we see the Fed. It's not that they walked back their so-called transitory statement on inflation. They ran it back. It looks like we suspect there's going to be three hikes from the Fed, the first one in May. I wouldn't be surprised if they moved it forward, largely because we do have the midterm elections, and usually the Fed doesn't like to raise rates right around that time. Don't want to see that they're interfering with politics. However, we don't think they can stop. As you mentioned, with inflation at, I believe it's close to a 40-year high for one indicator, it means that they can't stop.
So pick your poison, right? You've got high inflation, you've got interest rates probably headed higher, labor shortages, supply chain constraints. To your mind, Beth Ann, what is the biggest threat to the economy and therefore to the stock market in 2022, even though we know those are two different animals? But what's the biggest threat?
On the economy, I have to say we have a very low risk of recession. We have it at 10 to 15%. We see these problems more as growing pains, not necessarily something that's going to topple the apple cart for the U.S. Indeed, we're looking at while inflation is certainly pinching household and businesses budgets and pushing costs up higher. That's also when we're looking at both households and businesses' balance sheets rather healthy. In our analysis, we've seen household and businesses' balance sheets looking at the best in basically over a decade. So pretty good readings. We would look at probably the biggest risk we see is inflation. The question of a rapid reinflation of the environment, something that would cause markets to unwind. That would be the risk that we would see for the U.S., but we don't necessarily see that as a long-term risk.
No, we've got yields now over in the bond market. I think they're highest since the pandemic. We continue to see the flattening of the yield curve. And in the past, that has been a warning sign, a recessionary warning sign. Do you believe it is now? I know you just put the possibility of a recession at 10 to 15%, which I have to say sounds a little bit high to me for this year. What are your thoughts?
The yield curve has been rather flat for some time. I have to say, though, the yield curve, that signal, it hasn't been wrong in a very long time. So you have to give it credit where credit is due. However, one of the reasons why we'd expect to see that yield curve flatten is partly because there's two factors. One, of course, the risk of inflation, but also there's also a question of basically investors putting their money in certain ways. And people are, in a sense, somewhat the risk, of course, what's happening abroad brings money back to the U.S. as well, meaning that the prices on basically pricing pressure on bonds and yields push it down as well. So what happens abroad also matters to what happens to that yield curve here.
All right. Lots to look for here in the new year. Beth Ann Bovino, S&P Global's chief economist. Thanks so much for being with us. And coming up, we're going to dive deep into the Shark Tank. Famed investor Kevin O'Leary joins us with his top picks for 2022. Joining us now, Mr. Wonderful himself, chairman of O'Shares Investment Advisors and Shark Tank investor, Kevin O'Leary. Happy New Year, Kevin. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
I want to start with this sell-off we're seeing in stocks. Actually, last week, really rough start to 2022. And we're seeing the big tech get beaten up really the most, with the NASDAQ now formally in a correction. Are you using this as a buying opportunity? And if so, what are you loading up on right now?
I am, actually. I mean, first of all, let's talk about the volatility in tech. Tech stocks are historically volatile. They trade at high PEs. Many of them trade based on growth metrics, not necessarily earnings. And that gives them very, very high multiples. And so generally speaking, they have volatility. But the way I look at it in corrections like this is, has anything fundamentally changed in their business models? I mean, are you going to use Zoom less? There's a speculative name. Are you going to use Google less? Or is it going to continue to grow? Is Microsoft still going to be an enterprise platform? The answer is yes to all these questions. And so when you get volatility, generally speaking, in my world, I take advantage of it because I have to deploy capital all the time and I have to decide where am I going to put it. I like growth and I understand it's going to be volatile. And days like this, I remind myself, I've seen this movie before. Go back 17 years on Amazon, which I've owned for almost that entire stretch. We had 30, 40, 50% corrections each year. And yet look where you end up today. And so I look at it and say to myself, let's learn from the past, apply that to the future, take advantage of volatility. The economy is strong. The use case for technology, it gets more important to enterprise every day in every part of the globe. That's the investment thesis.
So, Kevin, we know the new year brings a lot of headwinds, but there are also lots of opportunities. So what is the biggest opportunity for investors as you see it in the new year?
Well, the one that I really found interesting over the last 24 months has been crypto and blockchain technologies and tokens and NFTs. You know, you have to make a binary decision about this stuff. And this is very difficult for many institutions. I talk to them every day because I'm in the indexing business, and many of them have not even started their journey into cryptocurrencies. But the reason you should think about it is this. This is how I wrap my head around it, and I think it helps investors to think this way. If you invest in Microsoft and Google and Amazon and so many of these other platforms, what is the core you're investing in? It's basically software. Google software. Well, Bitcoin is not a coin. It's actually software. The blockchain is software. Ethereum is software. HBAR is software. Polygon is software. So the real decision is, if you're willing to invest in software because it's a productivity tool as an equity, such as Google, why wouldn't you invest in software such as Ethereum? Because it provides a service, particularly in payment systems, that is being used globally. And that's sort of my investment thesis. And then the question is, which coins, which tokens, which blockchains? And for that, I apply the same rules of diversification I apply to my stocks and bonds. No more than 5% in any one position, no more than 20% in the whole sector. So I'm not anywhere near 20% in crypto. I've just gone over 10.7 in our operating company, but I have a plethora of positions. And I'm going to make this decision there that this is even more volatile than technology equities. And it certainly is. Bitcoin's having one of its worst starts ever. But you have to get used to it, just like you had to get used to Amazon, where it would have these 30 to 50% corrections. Same thing with Bitcoin.
So are you using crypto sort of as a way to hedge or diversify from other assets like real estate, for instance? Are you using a sort of instead of the way we would traditionally use gold as a hedge?
That's an excellent question. And the answer is yes. And there's a direct tie into real estate. Here was my dilemma last year. I sold a lot of our commercial real estate in our portfolio, turned into cash. Called my cash desk, said, what are we getting for this cash? Because I haven't got any ideas to deploy it yet. I need some time because I like to put cash back in the market slowly, take advantage of corrective days like this, et cetera. And they said, we can get 20 basis points, 20 basis points. And I said, wait a second, inflation's over 6%. That means I'm being taxed at 5.8% on holding cash. And that was when I started my exploration into crypto. And it took me to two platforms that I use today, FTX, for where I hold a lot of my, it's a centralized, and I have to disclose, I'm a paid spokesperson and an investor in FTX and use their platform, and Circle, where I use USDC, where I stake stable coins and get somewhere between 4 and 6% interest. That was my first exposure. And let me tell you something, you know, it took me 6 months to get my own compliance department and my own external auditor to agree to sign my statements. That's how difficult this is going to be. But as the adopt, and that is, in fact, the tremendous potential of crypto. If we make it regulated, if we get institutions into it and find a way for them to be compliant, there's trillions of dollars going to come into this space because it has a pragmatic use. Now I'm at least keeping pace with inflation on my Circle stake, and I've got a wide range of holdings in my FTX account, and it's completely compliant with my external auditors and my internal compliance department. It took a long time to set up. Other institutions are going through the same birthing pains.
Yeah, we'll see if 2022 brings some clearer regulation in that space, Kevin. But I'm curious if you've bought any of those non-fungible tokens, those NFTs, how much of the portfolio is dedicated to those?
No, I don't have a lot of NFTs yet, but I will tell you, I actually believe that the potential for the NFT market is actually larger than Bitcoin. And I'll tell you why. The idea, and let's take a physical asset. The one I like to use as an example is watches. I'm a huge watch collector. I have a massive collection of watches. One of the biggest challenges I have is inventory management, insurance management, and then, of course, authentication. When people offer me vintage watches, I have to go through a very arduous authentication process to know if it's fake or not. There's so many fake watches in the market. NFTs could solve all of those problems. So in the case, a use case for the multi-billion dollar watch industry, because the actual trading of secondhand watches is 10 times the size of the original watch market each year, because there's billions of dollars worth of, you know, very desirable watches that trade all around the world. If I could turn all of my watches into NFTs, and that way I could let my insurance company know, look, these are the 10 that are out of the vault this week. Bid me on insurance just for these 10. Here's where they're located. Here's why I want them insured. And all the rest I'd self-insure because they're in a bank vault in some city somewhere. Authentication. Every time I sell that watch, the scan of its dial, which is down at the micron level attached to the NFT, would authenticate it. You could rescan it and prove that it was the original watch. So for that kind of thing, same with real estate, same with fine jewelry, same with pens, same with cars, all of this is going to move onto the chain. And so the best way to invest in it, from my point of view, is take positions like I invested in Mutable.com. They own NFT.com. They're building a curation platform for NFTs everywhere. And so that's an equity that I own. I own WonderFi.com, which has just bought the largest exchange in Canada. They have 375,000 accounts in a jurisdiction that really is progressive in crypto. The Swiss, the Canadians, the UAE government, some of these places are now becoming a little bit more progressive, and you have to invest in those geographies if you want exposure. So there's a lot going on, but it certainly takes a fair, you know, point of a lot of time in my day just tracking all this stuff. I'd say I spend 40% of my investment day tracking cryptocurrencies now.
You know, we actually had the CEO of WonderFi, Ben Samaru, on recently to talk about that deal. So, all right, we understand it. We get it. You're liking the NFTs. You're liking the crypto. What else do you like? Talk to us about other sectors where you really see opportunity this year.
Well, you know, I've always had a 5% weighting in gold. People don't talk about gold very much anymore because crypto has become the gold du jour, the digital gold, so to speak. But it's still actually, I think, an asset you want to have in a rising rate environment. And I think diversification now towards stronger balance sheets is going to be very important. I think if you think about a portfolio, you're managing an equity portfolio. For growth, you're going to have vol. There's no question. So if you're going to put 20% into technology, you're going to see price swings like we're having today. But if you want stability, go through the S&P 500 and find the balance sheets that are the strongest that actually are growing free cash flows, distributing portions of those profits through dividends. So my theory for 2022 is this: we're not going to get another 20%+ return in the equity markets. It's going to be more muted, more like 8 or 9%. Earnings growth, I think, will be around 8% on the S&P 500, plus add another 100 basis points for dividend distributions. You're going to make 8 or 9% this year. You're going to go through a lot of volatility, but that's still way better than how you're being treated in the fixed income market. Plus, think about the risk you've got. If you buy long duration bonds right now, you're going to get killed if rates continue to go up. And the yields right now on AAA or BBB and above corporate credits are not that attractive. They're still sort of 3.5%, which doesn't even beat inflation. So I think right now it's focusing on higher quality names. For example, I don't own the airlines. Take United, for example. I always use this use case. They started the pandemic with $7 billion in debt. Now they're way over 20. Why would you want to own that balance sheet? Why? There's no reason to do that. There's so many other companies that don't have that upside down balance sheet situation today. And those are the ones you have to look at. You've got to groom through the S&P and pick your positions. And then for growth, you stick with technology.
Well, I would take 8 or 9% in a volatile year for sure. Listen, Kevin, before we let you go, new year, new you. You look great. I understand you lost something like 20 pounds. In the 15 seconds I have left, how'd you do it?
I went into intermittent fasting. My doctor, I had my annual checkup last year, and he said, look, you've got to lose 20 pounds. Your blood pressure's way up. It's been going up every year because you've been gaining weight. That happens to a lot of people. Over time, you become more sedentary and put on pounds. He said, have you ever tried fasting? And I'd never had. So I fast 16 hours a day. It was hell for the first 3 weeks. And now I'm never hungry. It's remarkable. It's a remarkable thing your body can do if you get used to it. So basically, I don't eat breakfast. I have my meal at 7 or 8 at night, maybe a little later, and then I don't eat till 1 in the afternoon the next day. Try it. It really works. And you're never hungry. Just some advice from one guy.
I love it. You are disciplined, not only in your investments, but now with your food. You're an inspiration. Kevin O'Leary, thanks so much and be well. And straight ahead, we are going to follow the top stocks throughout 2021. But what does it all mean for 2022? Jared Blickery is going to tell us what trends to watch right after the break. Welcome back. From meme stocks to cryptocurrencies, the new stock market seems to be all about what's trending. So let's bring in our resident trendsetter, Jared Blickery, to break down the hottest trends for the new year. Jared, so far, though, pretty rough start to the year.
Yes, you take out energy and financials, and it's been a disaster for a lot of other sectors here. And let's take a look at the Wi-Fi Interactive. We have, as we've been talking about, have seen the greatest selling in tech. Now, this is a six-day view, six trading days in the new year, half of one down today. And we can see the market is down 6% and pretty close to its session lows today. The Dow off, not as much, just over 1% or so. And the S&P 500, the benchmark, down 3%. And I just want to go through some tweets I've been collecting. And this kind of speaks as to where we could probably go in the rest of the year. So here's one from Callie Cox. Bad news. Since 1950, when the S&P 500 has dropped in the first week of the year, it's had a 56% success rate of finishing the year positive. That's in contrast to if the first week is actually green, then we have an 87% success rate. So pretty dramatic odds are. Why would this be? Because January is an important month. Everybody's going back to school after the holidays and to work. We have tax loss selling that's already ended. There's massive flows into the market in January. Usually be interesting to see what the flows are looking like this year so far. But we'll take a look at that sector action in a second. Just on today's downturn here, definitely looks like a Fed tantrum. Growth stocks risk getting clobbered. Higher rates favor cyclical stocks that benefit from growth now versus later. And then a final statement here. Rate hikes typically don't upend the market long term, but the Fed must tread carefully. I'd add my two cents there. The Fed does cause a lot of recessions and bear markets. But yes, over the long term, markets usually recover. And here's something from Bespoke I thought was pretty interesting. Now, the Russell 3000 is basically representing the entire universe of stocks, small, mid, and large cap. And they're saying the average Russell 3000 stock is 27% below its 52-week high. The average Russell 3000 healthcare stock is 48% below its 52-week high. So you take a look at this chart here, the unloved sectors definitely in healthcare, communication services, discretionary. I do want to point out that so far this year, I'm going to put a six-day view. We have energy up nearly 10%, financials up 4%, but real estate, tech, healthcare, discretionary, all these sectors simply getting clobbered and probably going to extend into the new year as we see the Fed acting a little bit more hawkish than anticipated.
All right, Jared Blickery, thanks for coming through, showing us those trends in the new year. And coming up next, all eyes on the Fed this year. We're going to discuss what a hawkish central bank could mean for your money. Stay with us. Welcome back, everybody. With rising inflation and a tightening labor market, we're already seeing banks change their interest rate forecast to 3, sometimes even 4 rate hikes this year. Yahoo Finance's Brian Chung joining us now with more. And Brian, I guess Goldman Sachs, the latest to say they think we're going to get 4 rate hikes this year.
Yeah, Alexis, it took almost 7 years after the 2008 financial crisis for the Fed to again start raising rates. Could be much faster this time, as soon as perhaps 2 years after the economic lockdowns began here in the United States. As you mentioned, Goldman Sachs, the latest investment bank research team, to say they're now forecasting 4 interest rate hikes this year in 2021. They're joining the likes of Deutsche Bank as well as Evercore in saying the Fed could get that aggressive. Now, we got the Fed's dot plot, which you can see ahead of you on the screen, only a few weeks ago in December. And at that time, none of the 18 policy setting members of the Fed's committee saw the case for keeping interest rates at near zero through the remainder of 2022. Now, keep in mind, this is from the same 18-member committee that saw a 50-50 chance in September of any interest rate hike at all in 2022. So things have progressed quite fast. And of course, a lot of this is because of those rising inflationary prints that show CPI, PCE well running above the Fed's 2% inflation target. Now, whether or not this kind of sways the Federal Reserve to move more aggressively in the future depends on future inflationary prints to come. And keep in mind that Fed Chairman Jay Powell, who was tapped for a second term at the helm of the central bank by President Biden, will likely be pressed on how he's going to lead the economic steward through the next few years, because he's facing congressional testimony as soon as tomorrow morning. So that's going to be very much of interest for the next few years of Fed policy to come, Alexis.
You bet. Big week for Jay Powell. Thanks so much, Brian Chung. Joining us now is Principal Global Investors Chief Strategist Seema Shah. Seema, great to have you on the show, and thanks for being with us. I want to start with the Fed, bounce off of what Brian was just saying. How many rate hikes do you think we're in for this year?
Hi, thanks for having me on. We are expecting 3 rate hikes this year. And another 2 or 3 next year. So we have to keep in mind that actually even 4 rate hikes, so 1 rate hike per quarter, is actually was a very, very normal and standard kind of process of tightening in previous cycles. So although it sounds very, very sharp, it's actually it's not as steep as maybe it sounds, and certainly not steep compared to previous cycles.
So do you think that it's going to really dent economic growth or even consumers? Because consumers already dealing with paying more for just about everything. And now, you know, borrowing money is about to get more expensive.
Yeah, you know, clearly the Fed's intention for raising rates is to slow down some of those inflation pressures, take out a bit of the heat in the economy. So, yes, you know, likely things will become a little bit tougher. But in terms of really drastically slowing, that is not the Fed's intention. And as I said, 4 rate hikes, it's generally quite a gradual process of tightening. So we do think that fundamentals for the U.S. economy will remain pretty solid through 2022, despite all the tightening that we're anticipating.
Now, we know that 2022 is off to a pretty lousy start. The biggest, I think, and the longest sell-off we've seen for stocks since September. And now we have the NASDAQ in a formal correction. What do you do with big tech right now? And do you think that investors should be seeing these big drops as opportunities to re-enter the market?
Yeah, see, I think what we've seen this year, because we've seen such a sharp spike in bond yields, and really it's been driven by real yields, this is when times get a little bit more challenging for big tech because they're so dependent on that kind of direction. Now, on top of that, it's a slightly more challenging environment from the cyclical side as well, because we are looking at a relatively stronger growth path. That kind of stay-at-home trade from 2 years ago is quite fading. Now, what we do think, though, is that as economic conditions start to slow down this year, so we are anticipating a slower economic growth rate, you do need to see balance sheets, which are very, very strong. So at this point, although technology has been heavily hit, we have to start discerning between the big tech names and some of those companies which are actually the technology, but they don't generate much profit. We want to see companies with strong pricing power and significant profit margins and the ones that can really continue to deliver earnings. So from that perspective, although this is quite a challenging time, we do still have some faith in mega cap tech names, especially from a stability perspective for your portfolios. So we do think it makes sense to have a bit of an allocation, of course, not as much as maybe it was the case a year or so ago, but there is definitely a position for portfolios for big tech.
And is there a position or should there be room in the portfolio for things like crypto and NFTs, even though we know they come along with lots of uncertainty and lots of volatility?
You know, for some investors who will be looking, you know, it is difficult to find returns in this kind of market. We are looking at a period ahead, which is going to be higher volatility, lower returns. So it's going to make sense that investors are looking a little bit more creatively outside of your more traditional asset classes. For us, I think NFTs, the kind of the the Bitcoins are still a little bit too volatile for these portfolios. You know, we're looking for more stability. But we do think that, you know, you can look outside your traditional equity, you can look outside traditional fixed income and start thinking about alternatives and your private credit. And that's where you can see greater gains, but with not as much volatility as you may see from some of those cryptos.
I want to get back to inflation, which seems to be the number one concern for investors this year, as it was for much of last year. What do you think the key is to easing supply constraints? Because we know that that has played such a big role in pushing prices higher, that and I guess labor shortages.
Yeah, it's been really key. And actually, I would say that they're very much related. It's those supply chain constraints have been created because of the lack of labor supply. Now, going forward, although the current COVID wave may start to stand in the way, a little bit of a hurdle going forward, we are starting to see signs that some of those supply chain constraints are easing. And especially with vaccination rates rising in so many parts of the world, we do anticipate that COVID tolerance is going to increase. And as that happens, you shouldn't see major shutdowns of factories every time that there's a bit of an outbreak of COVID. And that should, over time, you know, this isn't going to be quick, but there should be a gradual normalization of supply chains. And as that happens, then we will see the fading of some of those most acute price pressures that we've been seeing over the last couple of months. So as we look at inflation forecasts for this year, we do still see it elevated for the first half of the year. But then coming to the second half, we actually start see it fading to settle around the 2%, sorry, around the 3% level by year end. So it's still above where you've had it for over the last decade, but certainly not as worrying as some of the numbers we've become accustomed to in the last few months.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Seema Shah, thanks so much. Appreciate your perspective today. And coming up next, last year we saw cryptocurrencies enter the mainstream. What's in store this year? Jeffrey Wang joins us with his crypto market outlook after this. Cryptocurrencies having a rocky start to the new year, both Bitcoin and Ethereum taking a beating here in the first week of 2022, heading into the second week now. Yahoo Finance's Jennifer Schoenberger joining us. And Jen, what are some of the top themes that investors are watching for in the crypto market this year?
Good afternoon, Alexis. 2021 was a big year for crypto that saw the digital asset class soar to $3 trillion, only to slide back just as the market for NFTs hit $40 billion. And this year could be an even bigger one for crypto, with more expected to adopt cryptocurrencies. Both Bitcoin and Ethereum have sunk coming into the new year as traders eye the Federal Reserve scaling back stimulus and raising interest rates. But even as markets adjust to less Fed stimulus, analysts think more institutional investors will invest in Bitcoin this year, pushing its price higher. Leah Wald, CEO at Valkyrie Funds, thinks Ethereum will outperform Bitcoin this year. She tells me, quote, "We believe Ethereum will continue to outperform Bitcoin by virtue of it having a far more robust ecosystem that is now diversified away from being so DeFi-centric to now also including NFTs, Web3, the metaverse, and other uses. Bitcoin's got a long way to go to fulfill its promise as digital gold." Through much of last fall, Bitcoin traded similarly to risk assets, often selling off with stocks. But Goldman Sachs predicts if investors start treating Bitcoin as digital gold, then the largest cryptocurrency could hit 100,000. Regulation will also be big for crypto this year. While crypto is largely unregulated right now, 2022 could see that change with lawmakers and regulators in Washington ready to act. Senator Cynthia Lummis, one of Bitcoin's most vocal advocates on Capitol Hill, will introduce a bill on regulating crypto that aims to fully integrate digital assets into the financial system. Her bill proposes creating a new crypto regulatory agency under the joint jurisdiction of the CFTC and the SEC. It also gives guidance on which assets belong in which asset classes and offers up new rules on taxing crypto and protecting consumers. Speaking of taxing crypto, in the coming weeks, Treasury is likely to reveal more of its thinking on tax reporting requirements. And lastly, expect more adoption from consumers and businesses when it comes to crypto. Crypto is already being applied to credit cards for use in crypto and purchase of real estate, underscoring how it's becoming a big part of our payment system. That's expected to continue with more blockchain technology being applied to everyday applications, from everything on how we bank to how we will purchase tickets. Alexis.
All right, Jennifer Schoenberger, thanks so much. I want to stick with crypto now and bring in Jeffrey Wang from the Amber Group. Jeffrey, great to see you. You know, if 2021 was the year crypto went more mainstream, is 2022 going to be the year we get clear and formal regulation? And what will that mean for investors?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I think you're right in your last commentator also touched on a lot of the main themes. 2021, clearly, I think crypto blockchain has now entered the mainstream, even though we're at the early stages. And as you mentioned, I think regulation is probably still the biggest overhang in the market for crypto and blockchain. I think it's encouraging, actually, that the SEC and Gensler have kind of taken the reins, kind of started pushing ahead with more clear guidelines on what will be allowed. And I think the whole industry, I mean, myself at Amber, we welcome the regulation, we welcome the clear guidelines so everyone can be on a clear playing field. I think in 2022, we'll see particularly probably some more regulation on the stable coins. That's a large market. And I think that will also be tied in with it becoming more mainstream. So I think we'll have more retail investors learning about stable coins, understanding how they work, using them to trade, understanding that, you know, you can generate more yield from a stable coin than you can in fiat cash. And I think that reason is also why it'll be more regulated. And I welcome it.
What do you think are some of the hurdles to crypto regulation? Because it can be very confusing. And perhaps those who are going to be regulating it don't quite understand it properly.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I guess one way to look at it is trying to fit crypto into existing frameworks. And, you know, some parts of the business can fit. So you can consider some tokens similar to foreign exchange or gold, as you mentioned. But then there are new parts of businesses, which is kind of earning yield on crypto, borrow and lend on these that are over collateralized. So I think ultimately, you know, for the basic functions of crypto, we will probably fit that into existing legislation, regulations. And then the market will have to adapt and the regulators will have to adapt on how to come up with more modern kind of ways to look at things to really encompass the innovation that crypto has had.
You know, Jeffrey, do you think that crypto will ultimately be an asset class, or will it have sustainable real world uses, meaning that, you know, it would be the currency of choice and truly compete with the US dollar?
Yeah, I think that's a great kind of question. I think it'll be a bit of both. So I think, you know, when I talk to people about crypto now, you know, in the past, people talk about crypto as kind of almost a single kind of asset, where really, I think we should start looking at it more as an asset class, which you mentioned. So, you know, in terms of similar to equities, you know, you would look at, you know, tax, financials, industrials. Now, I think even in the crypto blockchain side, you can look at things that are, you know, on the store of value space, or kind of layer one innovation, Web3, potentially, you know, NFTs, gaming. So I think it is definitely an asset class, and we passed that tipping point where you can look at the different kind of subsectors. But also, it's an interesting point that you brought up in terms of, I think out of those asset classes, we will find things that are adaptable into our real life. So in terms of payments and decentralizing payments, accepting payments, things around gaming tokens and Web3. So I think it'll be a bit of both.
Do you think that, I mean, Jennifer, before our interview, when she was giving us the lowdown on cryptos last year, was talking about predictions of Bitcoin reaching $100,000 at some point this year. I mean, today, certainly, it fell below $40,000 for a brief time, off about 40% from its high late last year. What are your predictions for Bitcoin in particular in 2022?
Yeah, I think, you know, Bitcoin is a very volatile asset. So we're having, you know, a fairly big pullback. And ultimately, my prediction with Bitcoin is going to be also tied to overall risk assets. So if we can have a conducive risk environment for all risk assets, I think Bitcoin will do well. And I think overall, I think crypto will outperform traditional assets if we have that kind of good risk backdrop. So I guess that's kind of the big question. In terms of the, you know, the 100,000 number, which people like to talk about, I mean, I think it's totally within reason to be able to achieve that if we do continue to have more money come to the come to not only crypto, but to risk assets in general.
Do you think that some of the smaller altcoins will just wind up petering out and going away altogether, because cryptocurrencies in the end is going to become a survival of the fittest world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one kind of way I like to think about it is, and talk to people, is it's similar to early 90s kind of internet, where, you know, a lot of the projects of today could fail, similar to a lot of the early internet projects. But out of it, you know, 20, 30 years after the internet, you have huge winners. And I think it's going to be similar in crypto and blockchain. And even I think we'll have positives from failures. So if some project fails, I feel like some other entrepreneur will come around, look at why that project failed, if the idea was still good, and they will kind of improve upon that. So I think the innovation in the space is truly phenomenal and really kind of hopeful for me.
And finally, Jeffrey, a little earlier, we had Shark Tank investor Kevin O'Leary on, and, you know, he's a crypto convert. He had once called it garbage, and now he's allocated some of the portfolio to it. But he actually believes NFTs are a bigger addressable market, or will wind up being a bigger addressable market than cryptocurrencies. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I think NFTs last year was probably really kind of a proof of concept stage for it. And it's obviously one of the big themes of 2021. For me, ultimately, I think, you know, that will, NFTs will continue to be a big part of the sector, but I think we'll probably see other interesting themes kind of overtake it in 2022, potentially. In the game token space, in the metaverse space, and potentially even in decentralized social media.
Oh, lots of buzzwords there. All right, Jeffrey Wang, thanks so much. And coming up, going public in 2022, we're going to discuss the big name IPOs on our radar this year. Don't go away. 2021 was a record year for the IPO market. So what can investors expect this year? Joining us now is Rainmaker Securities co-founder Greg Martin. So, Greg, I guess the big question this year is how long will the market window last for these companies coming to market, especially after a record year? I'm wondering if we have a little IPO fatigue.
Well, thank you for having me, and it's a great question. You know, it's interesting because at Rainmaker, we manage one of the largest trading platforms for private companies. So we get a real good lens as to what the future IPO market will be as these companies matriculate to the public markets. And clearly 2021 was a banner year in terms of number of IPOs, but the companies didn't trade so well after they went public. And of course, we're already seeing some substantial headwinds early on in this year, you know, as interest rates tick up, particularly for the, you know, sort of high growth, more momentum plays that the tech sector represents. And so it's going to be interesting to monitor because, you know, we've seen a pretty big pullback in the NASDAQ, you know, even this week and certainly today. And so I think valuations will really be tested. But we do have a lot of very large companies that are good companies growing well. And so I think they will be able to access the public markets this year. It's just a question of valuation and what the compression looks like when the interest rates are factored in. And so it'll be very interesting to see.
And we've got lots of big name companies expected to go public this year. Just a few here: Stripe, Klarna, Impossible Foods, Houzz. What are you most excited about and why?
Yeah, you know, I think we'd start with Stripe. Clearly, it's a bellwether company. It represents sort of, you know, the next generation of payment infrastructure on the web. So it's a great play for e-commerce. And I think, you know, we all can see how e-commerce has grown during COVID. And certainly it has a large TAM. And, it, you know, the company is being valued in the, you know, the secondary markets as a private company. And it's something, you know, between $150 and $200 billion. So that's a very hotly anticipated IPO. And, you know, they've been very secretive about what their plans are. But I think people expect them to go public this year. So that's certainly, you know, sort of the granddaddy that we're focused on because it's so large. You know, some other interesting ones, you know, that you mentioned that, you know, Reddit obviously just filed their IPO. You know, it was sort of one of the original gangsters in the social media space. It's taken a long time. They've had pretty significant valuations in the private markets. And so it'll be interesting to see how it trades as it kind of follows in the footsteps of Twitter and Facebook and Pinterest. You know, so that's one that we'll see. And that one probably could come in the first quarter. You know, another large software company, Databricks, has had close to a $40 billion valuation in the private markets. It's kind of following in Snowflake's footsteps as sort of a, you know, a data processing software business. And as, you know, the rise of data occurs, you know, in the enterprise market, you know, Databricks is, you know, currently handling about 40% of the enterprise 500. And, you know, Snowflake has continued to trade well, even despite some of the pullback in the market. And I think people will hotly, you know, receive Databricks when it comes public. And again, I think with all of these companies, it's just a question of valuation. You know, we're going to see some compression, I believe, in multiples in the market as interest rates tick up because these companies are so sensitive to interest rates because they're really being valued on cash flows that are, you know, 5+ years out. And so as interest rates tick up, and I think, you know, Goldman just came out and said they anticipate maybe 4 rate hikes this year, and we're already seeing it in the 10-year, it'll be really interesting to see how valuations emerge as the year goes on.
And let's talk a little bit about how they're going to come to market, because we know SPACs were sort of the way of choice for a lot of companies last year, until appetite, I guess, started to wane towards the end of last year, and those SPACs outpaced traditional IPOs. Do you expect the same thing to happen this year? Might we see more direct listings this year versus last year?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think there was a little bit of a fad frenzy, you know, a SPAC frenzy that was a little bit faddish in 2021. I think that the market absorbed too many SPACs, and, you know, we've seen them trade down. We've seen a lot of SPAC and target acquisitions fall with significant redemptions at the de-SPAC. So I think there will be a much smaller place for the SPAC IPO in 2022 and beyond. I think there is a place for it. I think they find companies that maybe don't go public the traditional way, but I expect to see a much greater percentage of IPOs this year being more the traditional way. And I think we're going to have a little bit more difficult market. I do think that rising interest rates are going to, raise the bar for companies to go public. It's going to, as I said, put pressure on valuations. And so I expect to see fewer SPACs. I expect to see much more scrutiny on the targets that they come with. And so I do think that that's going to be a much smaller percentage of IPOs this year. You know, as it relates to direct listings, I've said it in the past, there are companies that are just so good. They have such a great business. They're so well covered already by investors that they can go to public via direct listing. You know, and we've seen those companies, and they've traditionally been successful, not because they went public via direct listing, but just because their businesses and their coverage in the market was already so good. Like Stripe would be an example, Databricks possibly. I mean, these are great companies that I think could go public via direct listing. It may be that in a more difficult market where valuations are a little bit more challenged, they do prefer to use an underwriter and sort of get that marketing pop that you might get via traditional roadshow. But I expect the direct listing to only represent companies that are of a greater quality, and I expect the SPAC market to be much less than it was in 2021.
All right. In the 30 seconds we have, once again, the NASDAQ had more companies go public than the New York Stock Exchange. You see that trend continuing?
No, I don't. I think there's going to be a rush to higher quality companies in terms of, sort of current earnings. You know, as I said, as interest rates tick up, I think there's going to be more of a premium put on current earnings. I think it's going to hurt growth and momentum companies. So I think only the best sort of momentum and growth companies are going to be able to go public, and there's just going to be fewer of them. And so I think that the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange tends to be more of a higher quality, lower growth, but higher quality of earnings type company. And so I actually expect New York to probably outperform NASDAQ this year.
We shall see. Greg Martin, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it. And that's going to do it for this special edition of Market Movers, everybody. Stay tuned. Much more Yahoo Finance Live to come right after the break.
Investors continue to be on the edge amid rising rates, tech hovering in correction territory. Time to get out or buy the dip, we'll ask an investment specialist. Fed Chair Jay Powell is set to get a grilling during his confirmation hearing tomorrow on Capitol Hill. Lawmakers likely to want to know more about what the central bank's timeline is for balancing rate hikes and running up